The title of the talk is Unknowing Leap. A leap is a jump, but it has a feeling of, what would you say? It's not just a jump, it's got some kind of grace or wildness in it. It's a little bigger than some jumps. It's a common metaphor that we talk about in spirituality of taking the leap, leaping off the cliff, leaping into the unknown, that kind of thing. And it sounds like a good story. And it's so easily one of those imaginary, those little scenarios that we have going in our mind, that I'm just about to leap, I'm going to make the leap. And I think when it's the scenario, we're always just about to leap. Because that leap could never be made. So much pressure. That leap could never actually go into space, like leave the ground. Because it's just so much trying and it's so imaginary. And I love the description one of my friends gave, talking about a leap that happened to her, that she could call a leap after the fact. She got so tired, as well as bored, but especially so tired that it was more like kind of falling off the cliff by mistake, by falling asleep. And then she realized she was flying. Where flying was, she wasn't. And I also like that as a model or an idea, if we think about leaps in evolution, whether in a physical form or in our inner development. There's a big debate that goes on, apparently. I'm not in the United States much, but whenever I am there, it still somehow seems to be going on about whether evolution is or isn't. And it's strange to think that this is actually a real issue, like a national issue. It's very dearly held issue on all sides. And so it's strange to hear like actual arguments, like when someone's trying to find proof that there isn't evolution. And then I learned something about life that I didn't know. So for example, there's the question, if evolution is how things came to be as they are, instead of like something like that, like or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like that. Then why aren't there lots and lots of intermediary forms between like fish and crocodile? Why isn't there like a half fish, half crocodile creature? And then why isn't there like a half crocodile, half what comes next? Monkey? It's a good question. I thought, oh, now I can see that they have a good reason like to really wonder. And then the scientists would get really excited when they find a half crocodile fish, which I think they did in the last year or two. Because of course there's a certain randomness in what information is available to make all of our theories on. In the biology outside and in our inner world as well, we just pick up the most random evidence as evidence. Ah, look, this is proof that there is evolution, or this is proof that there isn't. And we have these ridiculous debates that we go on and on in inside ourselves. And so I like this possibility that life in its creativity lands in a particular shape, let's say it called fish, and then one of those fish goes walking. And then there's crocodile or whatever the next thing was. Because maybe the fish got so tired of all that heavy water or something like that. So tired, it just fell out of the water onto the earth. Like my friend who just fell off the proverbial cliff. So not like this bright future that we have, this potential that we're working toward and polishing ourselves and getting closer, but we get so tired of all the polishing and bright futures. That some, then there's some room where some aliveness can come near and something new can happen. And to me, this falling off the cliff metaphor gives room for like the finger of God and for randomness or accident or whatever the scientists would call it now. The not creative design, what do they call it? Design. Anyone know? What is it? Intelligent design is the modernized anti-evolutionary finger of God. What's the euphemism? Instead of saying God, you say intelligent design. So that the scientists get interested. Intelligent? I'm intelligent. Aren't I? But now if you would dare to say the word design, because the anti-evolutionary side has taken up this phrase, intelligent design, if anyone would use the word design about life, that would then become politically incorrect. So funny. So this unknowing leap where we give up, the possibility that sometimes, it doesn't have to always be the same way also, of course, we see in life that it's not always the same way. But many times it is that we give up. Or we just finally got so tired of hiding. We forgot to open our defenses. And something can happen. And even if we start to notice that something happened and make too much of it, something happened. So I think there's a few different kinds of leaps or falls, like falling through the floor, that I want to mention, not just the ones that really seem to be going towards the bright future. But just as a way to talk about our readiness or our being available to what life is about. So one really simple, unglamorous kind of readiness is just with emotion, that sometimes there's a certain state that can come that we might have felt sometimes, and it takes our attention, and so it becomes something to us, usually an enemy or an insult. Like if sadness would come, then something's wrong with me, so I've got to work on it. Or if anger would come, if I would suddenly be flaring up with rage, I notice. It gets our attention, for better or worse, because once it has our attention, there's not the possibility of the unknowing leap. And so we have to deliberately unknow that familiar state. Sometimes there's a state that comes not so often that has a different quality, and we call it sadness or fear or whatever. But we can't be too sure, and that would help. That would be an easy place to unknow, to just question, can I know it's sadness? And as soon as I don't know that it's sadness, there's a readiness for all that is there, for all that's in that. Not the kind of readiness like prepare with everything that we think we'll need. The readiness of unknowing, that I don't know what this is, but I can notice that it is. I have fallen into it, or it has fallen into me. Sometimes even just a busy mind, like that kind of frantic energy that happens sometimes, and there's a lot of thinking. And we could just think, oh, here I am back in the first class trying to begin to meditate again. And we didn't notice that it's not just a lot of thinking, that it has a certain quality that we could unknow and fall into. Or let it fall into us. And then it's wide open what can come. But there, I just want to say one small thing, that when there is openness or readiness or availability for something that is strong enough that it usually gets our attention, we immediately want to know what it is. We realize we don't know what it is, and we actually let ourselves feel it. That there, we can feel relieved that we're allowed to feel it, but then it can be painful in a real way. It's different. It's a different kind of pain than the dance when we have resistance to it, which is really self-torment. But when we actually feel it, it's a direct pain with aliveness. And that moment is a treasure. We could really let that pain that has aliveness, that's not a dance and a negotiation, but just, it can be breathtaking, literally. When we really feel, and it has aliveness, we're not defended against the aliveness of the experience. If we could let that, the force of that experience, draw out our love, draw out love in us, to actually extend our loving arms in what feels like the first time or a first embrace, so much tenderness can come. There's also when we get tired and we fall asleep in meditation, And when it's your first retreat with us, you think, oh, so I therefore I can't do lying down meditation. And then you come to us and we say, actually, that's what you need to do. Lie down, sometimes sleep. Eventually you'll wake up. And then come again and lie down again, and not knowing if you'll sleep or not, not knowing if it matters or not. Being that available. That it might even matter that I should sleep or not sleep, but I really don't know. And to make an experiment when I know that I don't know. Is a real openness. It's not like, okay, so I'm just gonna go and sleep and sleep and sleep. Or I'm gonna go and I'm gonna do that thing where I keep my arm up so that if it falls, I'll wake up. A totally different kind of openness, and that is this readiness that can allow that when a something gets tired of being a tractor in meditation and tracking ourselves in meditation, and we fall into, so it can feel like a space opens out, or we could say we fell into a different aspect of ourselves that has space that we can hardly feel. Also not to run away from that. Sometimes there's a little bit of fear, and so then we want to go back to a technique, which would be trying to make like a knowing leap. And if we could just let it be. Some people describe that process of allowing an unknowing leap or a falling to happen as free fall. Because we're going along with so little information, so much less than what we want. And something in us is like loving it, ready to jump out of the airplane. Finally have permission to jump. To free fall in that sense of this could be wrong. And sometimes there's more of a terror, even in the cells, when we fall into a wider part of ourselves. Which is totally fine. Could almost call it a good sign. Like, it's a sign that the body is saying, wow, that's bigger than me. That has something to say beyond my birth and death of me, the body. And even that terror doesn't erase that space part of us, that part that's in free fall. I want to just read the one translation of the first line of a Zen song. This is translated by Richard Clark, and it's they call it Verses on Faith Mind. We could call it like song, free fall song. So listen to the first sentence and don't take it the wrong way. The great way is not difficult. Woo! The great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. That's all I wanted to read about today. So the wrong way to take it is to try to pretend we don't have preferences. And then to wonder why it's so hard. But when we feel that there simply are preferences, and sometimes there's really strong attachment to them, sometimes there's less attachment to them, there might be moments where there isn't attachment to, period. And then we have a chance to feel like that part of us is in free fall and part of us is like holding on and will not let go. Eventually it will get tired. It has to. But I think trusting, not keeping track of either of those, the one that's clutching the rope and the one that's just falling, is fall. Free fall. Without knowing it. Therefore, great way. Unknowing leap. If we kind of could feel as if with the toes of ourselves or something, like somewhere in the background, there is free fall happening. Without it, there's not space for anything else to be happening, including that holding on to my preferences, trying to get rid of my preferences so that it will be easy and great. Before I get to the whole, all of this is an excuse to read one of my favorite quotations and have a little time with it. But before we get there, I just want to playfully kind of, let's say, announce. Don't get excited. The possibility that as humankind, we're still like evolving into ourselves, like we're still landing in what we are. I'm not the first one to say that, but what I mean is we know that there are certain things that humankind has that other species don't have, as far as we know, so far. So it's not too special. Also, there's a lot of us, so it's not too special. But we do have all of this stuff, which some species also have, like a lot of this. But we have this, and we also have this. And we also have, so we have this, in case your eyes were closed. We have all of this curvy as a flamenco or an Indian dancing gray stuff. Here, well, we think it's gray. When we look at it, when it's not alive, it's gray. And we have these thumbs. And we stand. We're not like the first things ever to stand. Like, as my son is, Jan is so into dinosaurs, which lived so much longer on Earth than human beings had a chance at, you know. So many dinosaurs could stand on two legs, just so we don't think we're the first ones. I was always told that we were the ones to stand, but like dozens and dozens of different dinosaurs, like really terrible and vegetarian as well, could stand on two or walk on four, as they like. Some of them had thumbs too. But what we have that's also in the mix that people don't usually mention is this really, really sensitive skin. We have really sensitive skin, we have thumbs, we stand up, and we have all of this stuff. So that combination, I think, is very rare. I wouldn't venture to say that no other species has ever had it all. But that combination. And looking at Asian medicine, traditional Asian medicine, Ayurveda to Chinese medicine and beyond to Japan, there is a connection among all of the thinking that we can do and the thumbs and the skin. I don't know about the standing up part. Maybe that's not so important if dinosaurs could do it. So what if our sensitivity, our literal sensitivity, is the most important thing about us? As one possibility. So what if that is our experiment, is to be sensitive in this, on this planet, at this time? And what to do with all of that sensitivity? And when we have this, we can pick things up, we can bring things close, we can be sensitive in such diversity. So far, the experiment seems to have gone haywire in terms of what seems to be happening in our extra. It's like the extra luggage rack or something. We're using it as a luggage rack. And we're kind of, let's say, driven out of our skin. In our current general way of being human. So just to leave that as an open experiment to play with, holding your thumbs, feeling into your thumbs, feeling into your skin. The intelligence of the skin is very particular. It's a very particular, very sensual, and it's interesting that it's also a very curvy kind of quality. And very grounded. So let's see what this kind of long quotation from Krishnamurti has to say about humankind. So first, he just says that meditation, for him, what he means by meditation, it's what makes life be life. It makes us as if having a different kind of eyes where we could see real colors instead of just being blind. Human blind instead of humankind. So he says meditation is not an intellectual affair. So I think that's clear. Here already, we don't have to discuss that more. But, he says, it's not an intellectual affair, but when the heart enters into the mind. So this is only a half of a sentence. And already I find it so curious that he says the heart enters into the mind. Instead of, I would expect someone to say the mind enters into the heart. I think that when we're at the edge of the cliff and we're expecting ourselves to jump off, we're expecting the mind to jump into the heart. The heart is so spacious, just jump, stupid mind. And then what actually happens, the kind of falling I think it makes sense that he's describing it the other way around. The heart enters into the mind. The mind is finally asleep. Or so tired that it gives up. And the heart enters into the mind, we could say very lovingly. And then that's a happening. That's a leap. It's not a leap that calls itself a leap, but something happened there. The heart did enter in the mind. My mind still really wants. Come on, mind, leap into the heart. So when the heart enters into the mind has quite a different quality. It's really then limitless. So the mind then is limitless. The same mind, the heart enters, the same mind finds a different department or whatever, and finds out there's limitlessness. This is limitless. The mind then is really limitless, not only in its capacity to think. So thinking is allowed. Not only in its capacity to act efficiently. I love this because people don't seem to talk about it, but it's so true in our experience that when the heart enters into the mind, we care without kind of being nervous about things. And the idea that pops up and the action that happens is so efficient. It takes care of several things at once instead of taking one care of one thing with several activities. It doesn't mind looking busy if that's what's needed also. It's not like about the posturing. But there's an efficiency. Exactly that word. So there's a limitless capacity to think. We would think that sounds like hell. There's a limitless capacity to act efficiently. We also would think that's like what is it called when you have to go and do social service as a punishment? Have to act efficiently, limitlessly. It's not that we have to, but the capacity. I think it's important, I'm laughing, but I think this is one of our big hesitations about just letting the mind go, so that the heart finally comes in. Is, I think somewhere in the background, we do know that humankind can act efficiently. And that we are humankind. But to have that power to act efficiently, in such a smooth, unimportant way, destroys who we thought we are. There's nothing left of who we thought we are when that happens. It's what we want and what we don't want. For our heart to be that big, that means that the preferences may or may not be fulfilled. But we somewhere know that it can be smooth. So, and then finally we get to the part that we were wanting to hear, that it's not only that we can think limitlessly or act efficiently without limit, but the mind, now that the heart has entered, the mind is also limitless in its sense of living in a vast space where you are a part of everything, where you are part of everything. He doesn't say you are a part of everything. He says you are part of everything, which is nicer. It's more like you are part of everything, not like a part. If we could receive a sense that that is what's available for us as humankind, in our sensitivity without defense, and the tiniest bit of defense it's no longer easy. Separate by the smallest amount. So this is the third sentence in the Free Fall song, Verses on Faith Mind, Zen song. Separate by the smallest amount, however, so the great way is not difficult. Separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from it, the great way, as heaven is from earth. Which I also think is a good joke, because heaven is not far from earth. Where does heaven start? But if we think heaven, if we think of heaven and the great way, so that's just a small example. Kind of, I don't know if it's meant to be built into the text or the translation does it or what, but the way that we've learned to use our ideas is about separation instead of the sensitivity, and that makes it difficult for us. What could be easy? Then Krishnamurti goes on. To something that I might save for another talk, because we don't have time for the whole thing. He describes what happens. He's talking about meditation. He's talking about when the mind gives up and the heart enters. And it's not a leaving of the world, because there's efficient action, there's limitless capacity to think, and there's the vast space, and there's the non-separation part of everything. And he goes to describe a little bit more. We'll come to another day, probably. And then at the end of this description of meditation, he says, it can all be destroyed as you can destroy a flower. And yet, because of its very vulnerability, it is indestructible. This is the main line, the main sentence that I wanted to add here. To come back to that sentence, I'll just finish the quotation because that helps. I think it's such a true sentence, and it's so well put that it's almost hard to get in there. So I'll read it again. It can all be destroyed as you can destroy a flower. So it, again, is this meditation, but as it's deepening and deepening, kind of taking over and permeating our experience. It can all be destroyed as you can destroy a flower. And yet, because of its very vulnerability, it is indestructible. This meditation cannot be learned from another. You can begin without knowing anything about it and move from innocence to innocence, which is the unknowing leap or the falling. He actually says you must begin without knowing anything about it. I softened it a little bit. You must begin without knowing anything about it. But if we think we must, it could easily become another cliff that we imagine we're standing on. And we try to find a way to begin without knowing. We try to create an unknowing, a not knowing that we could begin from. And if we just feel more in the everyday moments in our lives where we're sure that we don't know, if we could feel that freshness of beginningness in that and ride along on that movement that then happens, that doesn't cease. So that means in the very most humble moments, in the very most even devastating moments, it doesn't only have to be that way, but very often that's how we notice our vulnerability. It can all be destroyed as you can destroy a flower. So meditation can be destroyed. The process of meditation can be destroyed. We also know that even the mind and the heart
can be shattered
by one word. We know that the body can be destroyed so easily. I like that he says it can all be destroyed, so that we remember that everything is a way into, and yet, because of its very vulnerability, it is indestructible. When we accept and digest our vulnerability, like then a wave can come over us that maybe is the heart entering the mind. Where we love to hear the call of innocence, and we hardly hear the call of the knowing, the tracking, the measuring, comparing. So even when the comparing and measuring and so on is strong, we can feel through a different kind of knowing that there is this indestructible underground innocence and calling to move from innocence to innocence, to free fall from unknowing to unknowing. Even with our preferences active, the attachment to our preferences on, that doesn't destroy. It actually shows us what is undestroyable. Even let it be as strong as it wants. And then it's really much easier to find what's not touched by that, which is the only place we could be, basically. Without the torture. The torture shows us the only place of rest. And because even the slightest untruth that is told in our mind, much less outside, hurts somewhere in our being, because we're that sensitive. We have a lot of, let's say, information to go on. A lot of chance to feel what's not hurting and what is the tenderness that would wrap that pain, if allowed, in love and freedom. That would be wrapped in that wave. Is it enough? Is there any question? Anything to say? Is it enough? Or any question? Anything to say? Sorry, you're so blinding.
Yeah, I was noticing that the light, just the sun, is just shining right in speaker's eyes. Maybe we should do something about that.
It's kind of nice.
Oh, it's nice. Okay. But the heart going into the mind, and then we've been talking about the leap and different things. But it seems to me that the heart coming into the mind is a very gradual very slow process, can't it? I mean, that's what it seems like to me.
In one way, yes. In one way, like in any one moment, if there's an entering, it's not slow. Even if it's just small, even if it's not like a big, marvelous awakening, it's better. But in that, it has no history. It's not really in time.
Yeah, doesn't it have to...
And at the other side, there's a momentum, definitely.
Yeah, it's almost a major transformation
mm.
of the mind. And do we ever have to take a while to begin to trust it? Or is that trust just there?
It's basically, you're exactly on the point that it's basically about trust. That's what takes the time, is our learning to trust. That's what I mean about the readiness, exactly. It takes us a long time to trust.
Yeah.
So we could say that we have momentum because we start to realize that our experience is such, and maybe I can trust a little more. Oops, no, etc. And another way we could see it is as a discovery of what is, that we tentatively explore. And sometimes we go really far and into it and come back and forget for many years that we ever, was that real? Was that a dream? There's many ways of looking at it, and it's all ways of looking at it. But for most people, it's about letting the trust grow.
Yeah.
Which has a lot to do with more fun.
Yeah.
And that's the other part, the other side of our humankind sensitivity, is that there's a certain kind of fun that tells a lot about us. It tells a lot about this that he's talking about.
Yeah.
So we're so sensitive that the, as I said, that even this tiniest untruth somewhere hurts, even if we grip it with all our might. They did this to me, or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm a victim, or whatever.
But
then the fun, the sensitivity for our fun, we have not developed as much as our sensitivity to the pain.
As our sensitivity for what?
Our sensitivity to the pain, we have developed to the utmost. Our sensitivity to the fun, we have developed a tiny amount, but still, even so, we can feel fun sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, maybe this is what I think about it. Sometimes, in some situations, our own sensitivity makes us vulnerable to bad people, to people that want to hurt us or destroy us.
Mm-hmm. So I would say maybe two things for now, and we can continue another time. One is there's the sensitivity and innocence that can freely move and be moved. And there are the ways of that we have been educated, and through our experience, that we have blindness, that we don't allow the free movement that could happen away from some difficulty, where we see something and we don't see it. So it's not that bad things only happen because we're blind, but many, many times it's because of a habit energy of not just naturally being moved by life away from a danger,
mm-hmm.
a habit of repeating. So it's not that we can say that always it's because of my blindness that something bad happened to me, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But many times. So we can, the second thing or the second way to say it is really feel, be open to what it, what sensitive, what is humankind and its sensitivity. Because a lot of times, because our sensitivity has gotten so heightened towards pain and not so heightened towards happiness, we've specialized in pain more. So what we how we experience our sensitivity is more honestly called reactivity. It's not purely an innocent sensitivity that feels poison and goes away. The cells feel the poison and go that way. There's a reactivity that gets into a dynamic and drinks poison or rubs it all over us. So let's leave it like that for now. Danny needs to get back to bed. May all beings be happy.